The song by the Byrds, Turn, 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 in 1965, played off these words, and the subsequent verses here in this very poetic passage, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, time to mourn, a time to dance. Time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. Time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Time to gain, time to lose. Time to keep and a time to throw away. Time to tear and a time to sow. Time to keep silence and a time to speak. Time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. You know, when you read this, you think maybe of that song. You go back in the hippie days and you can imagine them singing the song and getting some comfort and some solace out of it, because it senses, you know, in a world of turmoil and confusion and unrest, it kind of gives a sense of it's okay. It's a time for everything. And in a way, it was a comfort to the people of that day. And yet, I think what Solomon is intending here is a little bit different than what you're imagining. Because what he's trying to come to in his wrestling, if you're visiting with us or if you're new to the study as we're going through the Bible, we find ourselves in chapter 3 here, of a volume by Solomon, King Solomon, who quite frankly was going through a lot of confusion, trying to measure the reason and purpose of life measured under the sun. A favorite phrase that he uses, under the sun, that is, in this temporal world. Not considering eternity, not considering, you know, heaven, just on this earth, under the sun. What is life? And his conclusion was all is vanity, all is futile, empty, purposeless. Because in his backslidden state, taking God out of the equation, even with all of his money and his power and everything that he had, all his women and in his life, he came to a conclusion, life is futile, it's vanity, it's frustrating. The Latin word, as we mentioned, frustrated, comes from the word in Latin, in vain. Or the English word frustrated comes from the Latin word in vain, which means that just there's no purpose to it. And isn't that the frustrating thing? When you cannot find purpose, you frustrate yourself. It grinds at us when we cannot understand the purpose of something. So Solomon is wrestling with these things. And of course, in his wrestling with it, he's trying to project, okay, there is a purpose for everything under heaven. A time to kill, time to heal, time to be born, time to die, time to plant, time to pluck up. And some have even read cynicism here, you know, just like the monotony of even the good things that you could possibly see, well, okay, this is good. But even the bad things, there's a purpose for it. But just the droning on of life under heaven, there is a sense here that Solomon is expressing. Now, there is a time for each one of these things when you consider God's purpose. But his question in verse 9 is, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I've seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. It almost appears, his impression is, that everything that we see here is just to occupy our time. But for what purpose? What's the profit in it? What is the reason? What is the meaning? So there's a time for everything. Everything's happening. But what is the real meaning behind it? You know, depending on the time, things are appropriate or inappropriate. And this is the thing, this time, this property of time, which we have a difficulty understanding because we can't get outside of it. We're in it. We're bound by it. It's part of the physical universe we live in. In fact, some of the theories of Einstein and others have, even Augustine before, realized that time began when God created the world. It did not exist in the same way because time is a physical property. You can't divorce time from creation, from matter and space. Time, matter, and space are intricately undivorceable. They're just intricately together. When you get out of the physical domain, time will have new meaning. It won't be this timeline because we'll see things totally different. But there's an appropriate time Solomon is trying to say under heaven. That is there is a time for, there is a season for every purpose under heaven. You know, even when it comes to the negatives. Die, uproot, kill, break down, weep. There are times. One pastor, extremely frustrated in the ministry, left the pastorate after 20 years, became a funeral director, and he was asked why. Why'd you do that? He said, I spent 10 years trying to straighten out people. 10 years trying to straighten out Mark. He never got straightened out. 8 months trying to straighten out Hank, and he never got straightened out. 2 years trying to straighten out Alice. She never got straightened out. Now when I straighten them out, they stay straightened out. Sorry about that. Just want to make sure you're still with me on this one. But you know, there is that sense of frustration that people have with their jobs, with their lives, with when they cannot see a purpose. And in a way, what he is expressing is that, what is the purpose? I've seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. Okay, what's our task? You know, this is our task to pass the time. But what profit is it? Here's the interesting thing. Solomon is going to express here in verse 11 that which gives an inclination to understand about this purpose. He says he has made everything beautiful in his time. In fact, we even sing the song, in his time, he makes all things beautiful in his time. Which is to mean that there is a purpose for everything that happens. And many times, even I don't understand, I need to cling to that purpose. Because he goes on to say, also he has put eternity in their hearts, except, notice this word, except. But here's the problem. No one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. See, here we've got this tension. We have eternity hidden in our heart because we are eternal beings. God created us that way. We are different from all the other creation, you know. We're different from the animal kingdom. I know some of you don't like to hear this, that there is a difference between us and the animals in the sense of, you know, you love your pet like a family member. But quite frankly, there is a big difference. Because God breathed into man and he became a living soul. He put his spirit within him. And there is a difference because we have a God consciousness. Animals are on this plane of this earth. They're very much in tune to this environment. They're in tune to this life. And even with the pets that you have, you see they have emotions. They can feel. They have everything to deal with on this level. But their eyesight, their level, and even the fact they're on all fours keeps them very firmly planted to this earth. Here, God created us to walk on 2 feet. Now, if you're talking strictly from an evolutionary standpoint, that is a very inefficient mode of transportation. And in fact, most of the creatures that you know that are on all fours run faster than you do. So you are unique in this respect, but it doesn't make sense because it's not efficient. Yet God created us, I believe, with these two so that we can lift our arms up. We go out and we look to Him. When I go out into the woods, when I go out in my backyard, I'm different than my cat who died recently, but despite that, when he went out, his whole thinking, he didn't go out and look at the sky and wonder about God. He didn't go out and look up at the trees except to see the birds that he might possibly get. But I'm out there looking and thinking of beyond. I'm thinking of the, you know, I'm thinking, I'm conscious of a greater picture because God created us that way. Animals think in this plane. That's what they're concerned with. God has created us eternal. He has put eternity in our hearts. A sense that there is a greater picture. So the problem is we can't see. We can't work it out from beginning to end, but we need to. But we can't, but we need to. And you have this tension. This is what Solomon is wrestling with. You know, and many times people early in their life, you know, dealing with this sense of eternity put in them, cannot make sense of who they are and what their purpose in life is. And they try to make sense without God. But the problem is, it's frustrating to a point where eventually you stop asking those questions, who you are. You just kind of go, well, as Solomon is going to say here, verse 12, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It's the gift of God. Do you sense this? Do you sense what he's saying here? Is that what life's all about? Well, just eat and carry on and Do the best you can. There is cynicism here. And there is a frustration here that's growing because God has put eternity in our heart, except no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. We can't see it. This is why so often I respond to things a little differently. You know, when I hear of what some feel is bad news, or they tell me bad news, again, I'm very reluctant to say this is bad, because I do know how God is able to turn things into good. So I just look at it from this angle. Well, the Lord knows. I don't know. Well, Pastor, why did this happen? Why am I going through this? Why did God allow this? I don't know, but God knows. And so I will say the Lord knows. And that's enough for me. I cannot understand the work from beginning to end, but I know eternity is in my heart, so I've settled it with the fact that I know that He knows, and that's enough for me. There is a sense of ultimate purpose here. This is good because God is going to work it out for good. I don't understand how, but I know in His time, He'll make all things beautiful in His time. Now, the sense of futility here from Solomon is that this temporal world, it mocks us because we're made for something bigger, and we're stuck here in this temporal globe. We can't get beyond this. In this temporal moment, we love, we hate, we have peace, we have war. All these things, however, are pointless and purposeless unless there is something beyond this. Isn't that what makes it frustrating, living in the now and the here and now, when we bury a loved one and we wonder, well, why, God? Why did this happen? I don't understand. I don't understand. Why did I lose this job? Why am I going through this trial? And I don't understand it. But we need to look ahead to know what matters now. We need to have a sense of eternity in order to put it all together. Take away that sense of the eternal, and you will be frustrated like Solomon here. You ever wonder sometimes why you're in a bad mood? Someone will say, whoa, what side of the bed did you get off up on this morning? And you go, I don't know, I'm just irritated, I'm frustrated, and I don't know why. Have you ever felt that way? Sometimes it comes of there are things that are happening that you're trying to piece together and you're fitting together, and eventually your computer stops. It doesn't make sense, and you can't even put your finger on it, but you're frustrated. It's because you have that sense of eternity. God has created you in a way that it's got to all fit together. You can't put the pieces together, and it's like you're here in this temporal globe. You know you were made for something more. In the Chronicles of Narnia, one of the stories where they are carried by this creature called a marshwiggle, whose name was Puddle Glum. And these are kids' fairy tales, but great meanings to them. But they're going into this underworld for a task that they now have to complete. And they're in this underworld. They encounter a witch who casts a spell on them and makes them think that there is no overworld. In other words, that all that they imagined in their whole life up there on the overworld was all a dream, that the only world that ever really existed was this underworld. And she would say, like, you see this lamp over here? You only imagined a bigger and better lamp, so you called it the sun. You know, and so she was making them think, and they were under the spell, and they were dazed, and they were saying, yes, this is all there is. Until this marshwiggle figures it out. He sees the flaw in this spell. Because he says, I have an inner longing for something greater than that lamp. So there must be something greater. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this inner longing unless there really, truly were something there. And he gets out of the spell and he rescues the other children. And it's kind of the end, the story unfolds. But I look at this as that God has created us with that inner longing for meaning and purpose. And to know what is the end from the beginning, to see how it's going to unfold, because He has created us for His purpose. We long to escape this temporal world, this the mundane affairs of this life. So we amuse ourselves with movies. We love the sci-fi. We like the things that go beyond us. You know, we love the shows that are going to, it explains why Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, they did 1, 2, 3, you know, they kept making them because there was a demand for this escape. People want to escape just here and now, but we're bound by this earth, this gravity, this time. And so dull our existence is here, it's magnified this sense that there's got to be something more, that we delve off into fantasy world. And so Solomon is wrestling with these very same issues. But he says this in verse 14. I know whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing shall be taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. He does it that we would fear, we would have a deep respect for him. He's put this in our heart that we would reach out to him, that we would honor him, that we would long to know him. Because he's got it all worked out from beginning to end. Nothing can be added, nothing can be taken away. Again, God is outside of our time domain. He sees the end from the beginning. So how can you outsmart him? How can you outthink him? God does it for a purpose. We only see the cocoon on this side of eternity. But there's a butterfly waiting to emerge. And the cocoon looks ugly and gross and hairy, yet outside on the other side, there's a butterfly waiting to emerge, free from gravity's constraints. In much the same way that we seek to escape reality here because we were made for something more. And that which is has already been, and what is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. You know, this is an interesting way of looking at God looking outside of time, being outside of time in the eternal realm. For example, the best example I've used in the past is the idea of a parade. Imagine you're sitting in these grandstands, you're looking at a parade, and you can only see this one little narrow section. So a float goes by, and then it's gone. And then another one comes by, and then it's gone. Just like moments in time. It's here, then it's gone. Here, and then it's gone. Because right now, right this moment, right now, oh, it's already passed. Now you've gone into a new moment. And now that's given way to another new moment. And so every moment is different, and that's how we are in this timeline. But imagine not having that perspective, but imagine being up in the Goodyear blimp looking at the parade. You see the beginning of the parade to the end of the parade all at once. Now, when you're there in the timeline, you see this one float pass, and ooh, that's pretty cool. Mickey Mouse, I like that float. And I want to see that again. What do to see that float again? In order to see that which has passed, you have to go forward. And in order to see that which has not yet come, you need to go backward. And when you think of time in this way, it kind of boggles your mind, but it's time is an interesting thing from God's perspective. That which is has already been. What is to be has already been. From God's perspective, it's already there. It's in the ever-present now. Right now, at creation, he is there. Right now, the end of the universe, he's there. He's outside. And boy, we have this eternity there just like he has in our hearts, but we don't see everything, and it's frustrating. Notice what else he frustrates himself with. By the way, he talks about God requiring an account of what is past. Notice his frustration under the sun. Moreover, I saw under the sun, that is in this temporal globe, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. Now this is another inbound thing in our hearts that's so important to us. Justice. We want justice. Not for us, of course, but for everybody else. There has to be justice. Why do you think our movies need to end with some conclusion? They need to conclude the matter. The bad guy gets it. The good guy escapes. And when that doesn't happen, we get mad. Now, we can endure a sad ending to a movie, but we cannot endure an unjust ending. We need justice. Justice has to take place. You cannot end the movie. How can that guy get away with that? And you want to go fight somebody. You know, you're frustrated because it ain't right. See, God put it this way, and this is, again, Solomon's frustration under the sun. In the place where there should have been justice, wickedness was there. And he says, and I said in my heart, he had to conclude this. He said that God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and every work. It has to be that God judges. It has to be that very wicked, wealthy man that ripped people off and put people in jail unrighteously, did all the other things in his business, and he dies in peace. It's got to be something else. He's going to have to stand before his maker. We need that. We have been created to feel we need that. God is just, and he will judge. Not one thing escapes his notice. Now here is where it becomes very sticky, because when you consider God's holiness, of course his justice is going to basically, you know, confound all of us. Because all of us are guilty in some way or another. And we can't stand before a holy, perfect God. God devised a way in the Old Testament when the angel of death went through and was going to destroy the firstborn, all the firstborn of both man and beast. The Lord told Moses to instruct the children of Israel to have the Passover with the lamb that would be slain, and the blood would be put on the doorpost so that when the angel would come over, he would pass over that home that had the blood on the door so that they would be protected inside from the angel of death. God devised a way that the blood would cover that family. And in a way that looks forward to our Passover lamb, who is Jesus, who is the very Son of God, who came forth and took upon himself that penalty for our sin. He died in our place. And his blood applied to our life, put to us, covering us under his blood, we escape this judgment that God will judge the whole world. Because now he passes over us because we're declared righteous by the blood of Jesus. But every other deed that's outside of that will be judged meticulously. Not one word, not one action, however small it might be, will go unaccounted for. Are you prepared to stand before God under that scrutiny? Let's just take away the law of Moses. Let's just take away all the laws in this world and say there is no laws except for the laws that you've made in your own heart, except for that which you expect others to be. You know, you fail by that standard alone. You haven't even lived up to the standard you expect others to live by. Because you always have an excuse when you steal or lie. But someone else, how dare they lie to me? How dare they take that? But, well, you see, in my situation, there was a reason. And we live that way with this double standard. But when we stand before God, everything will be accounted for. And even if we're only judged by our own standard, we're done for. We're history. So are you prepared to stand before God on your own merits? I would hope that you realize the need. That if you're going to come under the judgment of God, that blood be over your life, that the angel of death may pass over you. The only way you're going to find that is in Jesus. The only way you're going to ever come to that place. Well, I said in my heart, he says, God will judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time, there is a purpose for every work. And I said in my heart concerning the condition of the sons of men. And in other words, he's trying to reconcile in his heart this injustice on the earth under the sun. So he says, I said in my heart, well, God's going to judge. Then he says, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them that they may see that they themselves are like animals. God puts us in these tests so that we could see our frailty. Now, we're different from the animals, but in many ways, this is the problem with man. He's trying to identify with the animals. He's trying to live on that plane. He's forgetting that he is a man created for the purpose of worshiping and knowing God. There is, he walks on his two legs, uniquely. And he begins to act as if he's just identifying with the animal kingdom. So he is, what is he doing? Well, you know, your animals are only concerned about their appetites, their basic needs. And here now man is trying to identify that. So he's got his appetites for food. He's got his sexual appetites. He's got his emotional appetites. And that's all that matters to him. So he's trying to just live on that earthly plane. And so God then allows certain things to come into his life to test him so that he can see just how beastly he's become. So he can see, no, there's something more than that. You're denying. See, it comes to a point when you're asking that question and during your adolescence, who am I? What am I? What's my purpose in life? And it becomes so painful that you want to block it out or you need an answer. You don't get an answer right away, and so you block it out. It's too painful to look, so you just begin living on this temporal plane. You don't look up anymore. Your eyes are firmly set right here. Just what's here is all that matters. And you say, well, I guess I'm just going to make the best of it. And you forget. So the Lord allows a certain test to come into your life that shakes your world so that you can see how beastly you become. You just become like an animal, just concerned with the temporal plane. We need to be concerned upward. I know in my own life, it wasn't until I had a number of major disappointments and frustrations that caused me to again research those questions. Who am I? Why am I here? God, what are you doing? Are you there? What's going on? And it was a good thing, that test, so that I could see just how beastly I'd become, that I was like an animal. For Solomon says, what happens to the sons of men also happens to the animals. When you live on that plane, one thing befalls them as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over the animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the spirit of the sons of men which goes upward and the spirit of the animal which goes down to the earth? Now, he's asking the question, who knows? Because in the temporal plane, he's still going through some of the question stage. We know, of course, in the Bible, revealed to us very clearly, there is a difference. The spirit of man does go upward. We do return to the Lord who created us. While the souls of animals, they were just made for this earth. This is earth is what they want. I know a lot of you want to bring your animals to heaven, but just keep in mind one thing here. They're not interested in heaven. They've never had a desire for heaven. They've never had a thought about heaven. This whole earth has been their plane. But God made you different. He made you concerned about it because he's hidden that eternity in your heart. Solomon, and there is a number of cults and a number of people that have tried to use these, take this thought processes of Solomon out of context and say, aha, see, there's no difference between the animals. We all go to the same place. We all return to the dust and that's the end. Well, if you read that into this, then you've missed the whole point of Solomon's statement. Because he's asking the question, who knows? But his conclusion, again, in this temporal life is a temporary patch to put over the pain of this question. So he says in verse 22, so I perceived that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Because I cannot see this eternal end, I better just be content with what I've got now. Now, you'd be amazed at how God used this thought in my life to bring me to him. Because I was on a quest, a search to find my own meaning under heaven, just like Solomon was. To find purpose and plan, with leaving God out of the equation, to try to find a meaning on this temporal plane. And I did my best. I remember, I can still vividly picture myself lying there in my dorm room bed, reading this book by a renowned atheist, mocking Christianity with this book in his satire on Christianity called Candide, and the author was Voltaire. And as I'm reading this, I'm missing something in his thought process. I'm kind of taking him at face value, and when he concluded the book with saying, well, I guess there's nothing better for to do. God has put man in the garden to tend his garden. That's all we can do, and you know that's what life's all about. Just carry on. When I read that, I missed all of his satire, and I just kind of took it at face value. Well, yeah, God made me, and he put me here, and then it made me think about God. And it made me think, God, if you're there, and then the Lord kind of set it up, so when I ran into that wrestler in the wrestling room and he told me about the Lord, it was just like one piece of the puzzle. And if Voltaire knew that his book was used to bring me to the Lord, he'd be turning over in his grave right now. But here's Solomon with that same type of mentality. Well, I guess there's nothing better to do than just carry on. Rejoice in your works, for that's your heritage. Do your best. Carry on. Carry on, my wayward son. You know, another little song the whole mentality of the hippie movement. You know, the whole picture here is that of we need purpose. We're looking for purpose. We frustrate ourselves when we cannot find purpose. There is a time for everything, every purpose under heaven, but only God knows it. We can't discover it. And this is where Solomon is right now. Now, he's going to piece more and more together as time goes on. But this is where he is right now. Maybe this is where some of you are right now. Maybe this is why the Lord allowed this passage to be here, because he knew that he might be using this to reach you on this particular day. And maybe capture your heart and thought to look up. To realize you are made in the image of God. You must look up. Get your eyes off of just trying to measure everything out under the sun here. There's more than that. Trust in God. who created you. And if you trust Him, He'll unfold His purpose to you. Now, there are many things about our lives that we won't know until eternity comes, but there are many things that we can piece together when we begin to follow Him. I can look back and I'm pretty comfortable with why my mom died when I was 4. I understand that one of the purposes, at least for that, was He took me out of a pagan home and put me into the home of a Christian, my grandmother, who raised me in the ways of the Lord. Later, I found out my mom did come to know the Lord in her last few weeks. So that was kind of a closure there, too. Why did I lose that wrestling match, that semifinal match in the state meet? I mean, I still picture, I can still to this day, it's so clear. If I'd have just moved this way, you know, one of those things. It's so funny how powerful something like that can be. But yet, I look back, God allowed that for a purpose. Again, He tests us. He puts those little tests in our path to see there's more, to lift our eyes up. If we would only look up, but how often we don't look up. How often our eyes are firmly planted on the problem, the situation that I'm facing in this temporal situation that I'm going through. And there's more. And we need to look up. And so here's where we are with Solomon. And maybe you can identify with where he is right now. But hold on as we continue through this book, because there's more.